That looks pretty good, Lily.
Is that Trevor Lawrence?
I married Trevor Lawrence.
The Jaguars quarterback, right?
My husband, Trevor Lawrence.
You're listening to Deeper Magic.
Welcome again back to Deeper Magic. I am your host, Peter. I'm here with Anna Lily Logan as our co-host for this episode. Hi, Logan.
Wow, changing up the top billing.
Well, I am. And that is interesting choice. Well,
yeah.
It's indicative of the last podcast performance, and so you'll just know if your name comes first.
Wow.
You'll know how people have received how well you've done.
You know what's super fun about that is that I can very easily cut in between all three of the names that you said and arrange them in whatever order I choose.
Yeah, here's the question that I have, though, is why did you only introduce yourself as the host? You said, I'm the host of Deeper Magic, and I am here with Logan, Lily, and Anna.
Well, besides my baseline of narcissism, right. Lily, you were saying that I sort of function as the host of this, right? Like, I do bring some content, but...
Yeah, you fair. Participate less in the topical conversation.
I do.
Than the other three of us.
Which is for the best.
Yeah. I think we would all agree.
Well, I'm just going to say I'm a little put out by the three of you right now, because you must have been COVID kids that never actually had to go into the workplace, because the way you dress... Your lack of professionalism coming into this
very is the segue you're going
professional
with?
Podcast.
Holy
It's a little
yeah, don't
off-putting
bleep
right
that
now.
One out, Logan.
So I'm just wondering, does anybody from your generation dress professionally anymore? Like, what is the expectation, Lily, about business?
Wow.
Oh, we're gonna go to Logan. This
okay.
is stress.
I came into this
so
ready to record a civil podcast episode, and this is what you're leading in
it
with?
It for sure is, because the dress that I'm observing in this room, I mean, Logan. I know you have
I'm
a soft
to contain what I'm saying.
I would just like to say this is a weekend
it
that
is.
We are recording this. Mm-hmm. So I'm wearing leggings right now.
Yeah, you're wearing like a nice sweater. I'd say that's business professional if she walked into the office today.
Really? But what excuse do you have? You're wearing a golf hoodie that was allegedly soft.
The fact that
you're
up
actually having us patch your hoodie earlier because it was so soft.
Actually, I don't have anything for that one.
No, that's really fair.
It's a Scheels hoodie, and if you've shopped at Scheels, you understand.
I totally understand. Okay, so kidding aside, what is the expectation for dress in your generation right now?
It is very confusing.
It really is.
The COVID has completely changed the rules around office wear to the point that even like leadership in the organization I work with, like they wear jeans to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine and normal. Granted, I work in an agency environment, which is not necessarily like, you know, we're not corporate. It's not business professional all the time. But there is an expectation we're meeting with external clients who are in the business world. When we attend on-site events for some of our clients, we are instructed to wear dress pants, blazers, that kind of more formal attire.
Well, you're doing events for pretty prominent people, I would imagine, right?
So I will say... Just as someone who loves fashion, I'm very interested in looking good mm-hmm. especially when I go to the office.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm working from home, I will be wearing a matching set or some iteration of kind of what I'm wearing today. But it is very interesting. I have been following this account on Instagram called Data But Make It Fashion. And they break down the way in which fashion trends predict what is coming in the economy.
Interesting.
So they talk about the hemline index, which signifies when women's hemlines are getting longer, mm-hmm. it typically points to an economic recession, which we are seeing like spring, summer trends.
I was just going to say, they must be wearing them down to their ankles like in Victoria
era
at this point, given
exactly.
the economy.
There's also a similar index. The hemline index for men indicates that when men's shorts hemlines in particular are getting shorter, the economy is trending healthier. And there's a correlation between some of these things. But one of the most interesting ones to me, especially with some of the trends in workwear mm-hmm. and just fashion generally right now, there is data that would support that when workwear, business casual wear mm-hmm. is trending, that is typically an indicator that a recession is coming and that the economy is getting weaker, which is what's happening right now in both the fashion and the economic landscape.
Wow.
More and more people, and some of the correlation, people think and speculate that it's related to people wanting to be perceived as more valuable to their employer.
Yep.
They're harder working. Mm-hmm. I'm showing up. I'm wearing a, like, skirt. I'm wearing a blazer, a button up. I take my job very seriously. Mm-hmm. Please, dear sweet employer, do not fire me when the recession hits.
Wow.
Wow.
So, I love that.
You know, take it for what you will, but
I think it's a great
it's
point.
Fascinating.
I love dressing nice. Every man that I've talked to looks at me sideways when I say that.
I was just going to say, I'm a man and I'm looking at you sideways right now.
I can't believe you're wearing a button-up. I'm shocked at that.
I was also surprised when he came downstairs in a button-down.
Well,
I did
preach earlier this morning, and in fairness, I did have to dig deep to find a button-down in my wardrobe. Yes,
but I'll say I come from the radio world, and my boss, when I was an intern at the time, told me because the dress wear at the station I was at was very nice. It was
it
collared
was.
Shirt. It was
yeah.
button up.
Yeah.
It was look nice, business professional, and he sat back and he was so upset about it because he said, I got into radio so I could wear pizza stained hoodies and shorts every day to work, and this is not what I had in mind.
When I think of people who work in radio, that's exactly what I think of.
Well, for sure. I mean, you were at the station.
Because you don't have to see them.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so who cares what
you're
wearing?
You were at the station at what? Probably when we were doing the morning show? You were there maybe, what, 4:30, 5 o'clock, 5:30? Like, when were you there? There was nobody else there.
No, I was there early in the morning. I left by 2 p.m.
Yeah.
That was my 8-hour day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, I had a different day. I would get there at 5:30 and leave at 8:15 when the show was over. So.
Yeah, I stayed and fixed all your mistakes.
You did. You did indeed. But I felt bad even wearing sandals back then because it was such a professional environment.
Mm-hmm. And I was at two different stations that had very different ideas of dress. Yeah. At the first one, I could wear cargo shorts to work, and they encouraged it.
Really?
There was one time, they said, nobody comes out here, our station's out in the, you know, sometimes we see people, but wear what you want, be comfortable, it's great. And then I went to the second one, and it got a lot more strict, and I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. I love dressing up, but when someone offered me to wear shorts to work every day, it was hard to go back.
Mm. Yeah. Anna, do you have any expectations about working at the coffee shop, what you're supposed to wear?
I mean, we have the two jobs that I have had at this point have been warehouse work and coffee shop work. And so
uniforms?
No, actually, because both of them were independent coffee shops. And so the warehouse work was wear something that you don't care if this gets destroyed, mm-hmm. basically. So there was no sense of like, you would have to wear something that would be safe to wear in a warehouse. So obviously, you don't want a crop top or anything, but mm-hmm. like, other than that, there was no necessary like standard of professionalism for what you were wearing. It was just safe attire so you don't lose a limb. Mm. And then in the coffee shop environments, there was more of a dress code at the first coffee shop that I worked at. There wasn't anything specific. There was no uniform or anything like that. But it was in Excelsior. There's lots of Minnetonka people coming in from the boats. Very wealthy area.
For people
area.
Listening outside of Minneapolis, this is a really well-heeled area. I mean,
yeah.
It's a wealthy environment for sure.
And so the expectation is you show up, you look nice, you look presentable, you have put effort into your appearance, however that can manifest for you. The coffee shop that I work at now, there is still, you have to wear kitchen-safe clothing. But really, that's about it. I've never seen anybody dress coded at my work. It's not something that people talk about super often. The one that people get really strict about will be your footwear and whether or not your hair is pulled back. But other than that, you can wear whatever you want. Mm. I worked this morning. I'm wearing leggings and a hoodie. This is my standard work outfit, especially with the understanding I'm going to get food stuff on me. I'm going to get coffee stains on me. I'm not wearing nice clothing to work.
Hmm. Lily, you and I we've participated in sort of visible ministry in the church that we both attend. And you've been on the worship team. I'm on the teaching team. Tell me a little bit about expectations for you as part of the worship team. And can I just ask, especially as a female on the worship team, and then I have a question for you about what I should be wearing in the pulpit. So, but go ahead.
There are so many expectations.
I can't even imagine.
And the feedback that, grant, because I'm not on staff, I don't have to field this feedback. I just receive it secondhand. Usually while drinking an old fashioned with Taylor. So it's all
Taylor's the worship
fun.
Pastor. Yeah,
yes.
Indeed. Yep.
It's too loose. It's too tight. It's too short. We saw skin. Whatever.
So there's
it's
no
skin.
Formal
seriously?
Enough.
You have skin?
I have
That's
skin
not allowed.
On your
is it
body?
On my body.
You're a woman. That's
oh.
a sin.
It's so atrocious Ugh. That a woman who is on stage would have the audacity So I have personal rules that I follow.
Which is what? Wear a potato sack and a hoodie?
Well, basically. No, but I won't wear shorts or anything that shows any leg skin.
Interesting.
Leg skin doesn't exist.
You might as well go two potato sacks. Just make it safe.
Yeah. Right. But on top, like, I have to be very mindful. And before I leave for church any given morning that I'm going to be on stage, I always do the, like, two arms up in the air test to see if my top will reveal any skin, because if I'm moving around while I'm leading worship, am I going to upset people? But it's feedback no matter what. Yeah. Like, nobody is happy. So I've had to learn to have a mindset of, like, I don't really give a rip.
And I'm guessing the men on the worship team do not do the two hand in the air test.
I would assume not. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I would assume maybe they don't have to. For emotional reasons, but also just practical reasons that, like, men's fashion is a lot less varied.
It's super limited.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot more limited than women's fashion is. So I just I've learned to be very mindful about what I choose to wear to church. And that differs drastically if I'm going to be on stage versus off stage.
Yeah, that's super fair. So I'm wondering about ties in the pulpit, but before I go there quickly, Logan, do you know how to tie a tie?
I do.
You do? Mm-hmm. Was that something you learned growing up, or did you have some sort of environment where you had to teach yourself?
I was involved in a lot of choir and choral events, solo ensemble, performing in front of judges. So there was a lot of going to schools, tying ties, getting presentable for performances. Yeah.
So Logan, I know that the answer to the question I'm about to ask is I don't take you seriously in any circumstance, Peter.
Absolutely.
But I'm just wondering if I was, and I've never worn a tie in the pulpit. I don't think I do when I officiate weddings, but I don't think I've ever worn a tie in the pulpit. Should I be wearing a tie in the pulpit? And would you take me more or less seriously if I was wearing a tie?
I think you have a stick up your butt if you're wearing a tie on the pulpit.
There's
something about a tie that tells me this event is a certain level of professional. Hmm. And I love that for weddings. I love that for very important business dealings, interviews, absolutely. But if you're required to wear a tie, like if I go to a car dealership and they're wearing ties, I say, you poor guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here to buy a car. I don't need to see what your tie looks like. Like, it's just choking you all day. And I love it for very certain instances. But if it's a daily requirement, if you're not the president of a company or something, man, that's just oof.
Yeah, I mean, Anna, you make fun of me when I come up in my academic robes, for example.
Oh,
you'll say,
always.
Is it Halloween? What are you doing dressed up like that? Yeah, but when you see ties, do you think that should be an expectation of professionalism, or is it, as you know, as Logan said so eloquently, a stick up your rear end? But I think it's the word that you, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, what do you think about wearing ties?
Honestly, I think it really does depend on the environment. I think my go-to assumption, if I see somebody wearing a tie in a situation that I don't feel warrants a tie, I immediately assume that person is pretentious and takes themselves too seriously and is immediately going to be a jerk to everybody else in the room.
Yeah.
That's my baseline assumption.
I mean, for the record, my husband did not wear a tie the day we got married.
He did not wear a tie. What did he wear?
He wore a turtleneck under a blazer.
He got married in a turtleneck?
Hold on.
It was so hot, you guys.
I was from Wisconsin, so I do understand.
I was like, actually, that is acceptable.
I might just need to see a wedding picture, but that seems like a pretty good move.
She is scrolling right now. I'm ready for this wedding. There's legitimately a wedding picture of Corey in a turtleneck. I can't wait to see this.
This is so exciting. I'm really upset that we don't have a visual element of the podcast right now because
I don't know. I mean, I can't tell.
Turtleneck.
That looks pretty good.
Is that Trevor Lawrence?
I married Trevor Lawrence. My husband, Trevor Lawrence.
The Jaguars quarterback,
right?
He was Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, no, that he has his coat on. Hold on. Here we go. No, it really genuinely looked.
I've never seen Corey with his hair like that.
That was amazing.
Yeah, he did have quite long hair.
He was killing it back then.
Wow.
Yeah, look.
Okay.
He had a little boutonniere.
Okay. I'm on board. Yeah.
He actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, right?
I got to give him credit for that one. He can pull that off.
But there,
isn't that so cute?
I do find myself in a world of it's two sides of the spectrum. If you're wearing a tie in a situation where you shouldn't be, what are you doing? And if you're at a wedding or something that's important and someone's, I mean, the low level of attempt, I get it. If I'm home in Wisconsin in my small town, I know no one's showing up with a tie. It doesn't matter what it is. Funeral, wedding, everyone in that audience, if they put on a collared shirt, you're lucky.
Well, okay, last question about this, because I grew up in an environment for sure where if you went to church, and this wasn't too far removed from like when you would go to a baseball game. If you see old school footage of baseball games in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, they all dressed up completely suit and tie. But there's a sense that people said, if you're coming to church, you got to wear your Sunday best.
Yeah.
And Sunday best somehow reflected your reverence for God in coming in your suit and tie. Now, I don't know how you think about that or if you had any experience with that. I look at it and say, either my heart is reverent or it's not reverent. It doesn't have really much to do with what I'm wearing that is maybe socially acceptable or unacceptable. But did anyone in here go to church when it was still part of we need to dress up in our Sunday best to go?
Not in my memory. I have seen photos of when I was dedicated as an infant at church, and everyone, both of my grandfathers, they're wearing suits. My dad's wearing a suit and tie. I had like a nice dress on for my dedication.
Wow.
But I don't have any memory of that ever being an expectation. Mm. And then I think as I've gotten older and still choose to attend church, to me, attending church, it's like another opportunity for me to express myself through what I'm wearing.
Okay. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. There's a certain degree, I went to a small Lutheran church growing up that was wear your Sunday best. It wasn't an expectation to have a tie on, but there was button shirt, jeans. Honestly, the level was your jeans can't have any holes in them, was kind of like, that's the level.
Yeah. And I don't remember any scenario where we did maybe every once in a while. And it was a little weird because with me in visible ministry or your mom in visible ministry, then you guys are in a bit of a fishbowl. But do you remember any of that?
I think for me, it wasn't so much about wearing your Sunday best, especially because that was not the environment of the churches that we were going to growing up. There was an element of like if you were going to be on stage, you were, you know, wearing something nicer than you would be if you were just sitting there. But I think for me, my experience of going both to youth group and to Sunday morning services is I would choose very specific outfits that would be very different than what I was wearing to my co-op school or to theater or just in my day-to-day life because of how I was going to be viewed as a young woman in the church.
Totally.
So that was something I was really aware of is how low cut is this shirt? How short is this? How short are these shorts? That sort of thing. Do my jeans have holes in them? Because if they do, someone's going to comment on it. And so it was more that sort of thing. It wasn't about wearing my Sunday best. It was, are people going to judge me for dressing a certain way in a church as a young woman, and they have opinions about my body and how that can be presented in front of God?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally resonate with that experience. Mm-hmm. Much more, especially once I got into high school.
Yeah,
there was a lot more, like, as I was very involved, like, kind of in leadership for our youth group and that kind of things, like, had a more, I mean, part of it for me, it was having a more visible role and starting to like be a little more visible within the youth group. But there were those added expectations as a young woman that what I wore to church. And I mean, I think it would be consistent throughout what I wore was, you know, it presented a self that was like very modest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
modest is hottest.
Mm-hmm.
And is that it was really interesting.
You've never heard this before?
I've never heard that. Even as a sexuality professor, I've taught that class for 15 years and I've never heard.
You've never heard modest?
I'm genuinely horrified. You've never heard that.
No, I know it's
before.
A thing. Like, that I know is, for sure that women get blamed for all sorts of stuff. Course. But I had no idea. Modest is hottest?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was
what a phrase.
Even as a guy going to Wednesday youth group or something, that was like a regular, every year, one of the topics was going to be modest is hottest and making your worth in God's eyes rather than the eyes of the men around you.
Oh,
and that was a regular topic.
Oh, that seems entirely unhelpful.
I will say there is an interesting, it was a really interesting dichotomy for me of going to Sunday morning church and having to be really aware of how I was going to be perceived by other people depending on how I was dressing, especially entering high school, having immediately come out of a dance studio, which had its highs and lows for sure. And because it's dance and especially ballet, there's a lot of conversations about eating and body image and all of those things that are happening because you can't separate that from dance. It just, that's how it is. But the studio that I was at, I was lucky enough to more or less have the experience of your body is a good and a healthy thing. It is something to be celebrated. It is something to be embraced. The way that you look is good and holy because it was also a Christian studio. And so it was very much the sense of all people are made good in the eyes of God. So your body is never something to be ashamed of. Weirdly mixed in with all of those images about like, and what are you eating? And how do you look in that leotard? And whatever, and like all of those things. But it was a lot of like really positive feel, comfortable in your skin, in your body, in how you move, how you present yourself to the world. And then to go from the dance studio to church and be like, this is something that I now have to cover up. I still have to be really conscious of it. I can't be confident in my body because the way that I am confident in my body is being deemed sinful here.
Even further than that, there is this weird level of almost secondhand embarrassment as a guy, as I was taught modest is hottest. And
did you actually believe that, though? You didn't believe that.
No, because what would
happen
was...
There was no way you believed
that. Because nobody believes that. I'm so interested in this conversation.
Yeah.
Please keep talking.
What would happen was, is, you know, you go to a public school. There are people who are at church regularly getting this information. There are people who are not. And even those who I would grow up with who were in the church, if they would wear something that was slightly more revealing than what they'd wear at church on Sunday or something, they'd wear something that I'd say, I would love to say, you look amazing. Like, you look really good in that. Just, like, not even from a, I don't want to say sexual standpoint, but you look really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I could give that compliment because suddenly I would be on the other side of, oh, I don't believe modest is hottest because they're not following this trend line that this put out before them. So am I supporting that by telling them they look wonderful? I better not tell someone they look great if they're not wearing the most unrevealing thing they can wear.
And okay, so hearing that, to respond from the female perspective of that, I think what has happened then in Christian circles in particular is, and I don't want everyone to like think that I'm so like trad wife right now, but like we have,
oh my gosh, you are such a trad.
That's how
we see you, Lily, is just trad wife.
In a very, that I believe, like, very spiritually and emotionally significant way. I feel like this culture of, like, I mean, it's purity culture, but it's modest is hottest culture.
Mm-hmm.
We have deprived young men and women of the ability to compliment one another.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In a way that is overt, that makes everything related to attraction and sexuality so deeply uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and this is like, I'm a little bit of a side tangent here, but I have this experience. My, like, brother-in-law is my husband's brother. He is, like, very interested in just, like, fashion, like, staying, like, up on trends and that kind of thing. Keldon, if you're listening, hi, I love you.
And would he wear a tie?
I can't imagine. I don't. He did not wear a tie to our wedding.
Okay.
I can't really imagine him wearing a tie.
Okay. But he is fashion-forward.
He's very, yeah. I think because fashion-forward. He's not stuck in the antiquated, like... version of
men's
fashion.
Are you looking at me when you say that?
I'm trying to address both of them.
He hasn't been to a baseball game in 1930.
Yes, that, exactly.
I did see Babe Ruth play, so yeah. So continue.
Unlike Peter. But there have been a few different times, even just recently, where he's been over, like, saying hi, or we're hanging out, and he's like, oh, Lily, I love how you did your hair today. Or like, oh, I love that sweater you're wearing. Like, that looks really good on you. Or really, and I, like, there's this, like, discomfort that I feel receiving a compliment from a man who is not my husband, because, like, I have never had the experience. The only situation where it's appropriate for a Christian man to compliment a woman is within the confines of a committed relationship.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so and I think it goes
both ways.
You got
very animated about that, Logan. Continue. Okay, go ahead. You guys are all wanting to jump in on this.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways too. Like, I feel this inherent awkwardness if I am in a social situation and I see a male friend and I think, like, wow, you look really good right now. I love how, like, I love your outfit, or I love how you did your hair, or whatever it is, that, like, I have this, like, gate where I can't share that, because are people going to perceive me as flirting with him?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, especially now as a married woman, I'm, like, hyper. There's a way in which I'm hyper aware. There's also a way in which I'm, like, I don't really give a fuck anymore. So, you know,
we just got to our R-rated episode moment. So, yes,
it's
indeed.
It's not R. It's PG-13.
Both
we get one.
I only said one time.
Well,
okay,
now you are where you just said it again.
I'm going
to
love
it. I only want you to bleep that out, Logan. I don't want you to actually take it out. We just need a really good little bleeper.
I love the idea of us being a PG-13 podcast.
I do,
that at one point in the show,
people,
you're going to hear
a
beep.
People
can
anticipate.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one
people can
person gets to say the F word.
I like it.
It just happens.
Every episode. Yes. I love
right,
that.
So
amazing.
And I'll bring it over to you.
Yeah.
Lily just said a lot there.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts.
I think it's really important.
I could see your eyes just getting wider and wider
over here.
Your pupils are dilating.
Oh, yeah. This is something I've actually been talking about with a lot of my friends, and I'm dying to hear what you, Logan, think about purity culture and modest is hottest and like all of these things, because I have only ever had those conversations with other women.
Same.
I have never heard a man's perspective on that aspect, especially of like youth group culture and growing up in the church.
And by the way, Logan, you'll be on your own for that part of the conversation. I am.
You're the wrong generation.
I don't want you in this conversation, Peter.
Sorry.
I thought I was making it harder on you, but I didn't realize that that was making it easier on you.
Are you still here?
Okay. Oh, wow.
Peter is taking off the headphones. Peter is opening the door and walking out of the room.
Yes. But it is, it's one of those conversations that I've had with my friends. Working in a coffee shop, I deal with a lot of people day in and day out. And it would be different than working in like a bar environment like Logan. But working in a coffee shop, I notice usually, depending on the level of effort I've put in a day, I will get a certain amount of compliments from women. And I work in a primarily queer coffee shop, so we attract a lot of queer customers as well. And so it'll be a lot of women or non-binary folks and that sort of thing. And when I get compliments from them, I light up and I'm excited about it and I feel good about myself and I feel pretty and like all of the things. And when a man walks in and compliments me on something about my appearance, my immediate instinct is to go hide in the basement until he leaves. Because I immediately feel deeply uncomfortable.
The discomfort sets in.
And there is something to be added to that about the customer service environment, in the sense of I am being paid to stand here and be polite to you. And I don't know if you're being creepy or if you're being genuine, but either way, I have to stand here and be polite. And I don't like that. So there is an element of that. The other thing is that I feel, generally speaking, more uncomfortable about the idea of complimenting a man on his appearance, because I don't want it to be perceived as me flirting with him.
Yeah,
I don't want it to be taken in a way that it is not intended, especially because I'm hyper aware of the fact that men are complimented less often on their appearance. And so when a woman compliments them on something, it like, unfortunately or unfortunately, I don't really know, women are complimented more often on our appearance. There's more value placed on our appearance, generally speaking. And there can be some positives to the sense of, I feel good about myself. I feel good about how I present myself in the world, how I look, how I'm perceived, all of those things. There are obviously negative aspects of value being placed on my appearance that is less present there for men. And so it holds more weight when they're complimented, especially by a woman.
Yeah.
Okay. So I do have a question for the two of you.
Yes.
Okay. So in this, and by the two of you, I mean Anna and Lily.
The women on this podcast.
The women on the podcast. Yes. And I'm just curious. So let's say that you're going out for the evening and you really spend a lot of time, several hours getting dressed up. And you,
have never once spent more than one single hour getting
that
dressed
up.
That
is so
not even for
true.
Prom.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, so
prom was different. Prom was
wedding,
2 hours for me.
I don't know if I spent more than 1 hour actively getting ready. Wow.
Okay. Well, I do know women for sure that do spend hours getting ready to go out.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just wondering, from the women that you know, or you yourself, you're walking down the street and two men on the other side of the street, you don't know them, but they wolf whistle at you. Okay. So I'm just
immediately
I'm just wondering if they're like, you spent a bunch of time, or females have spent a bunch of time.
If you're about to ask me if there is any part of me that feels complimented
like
by that.
Like any part.
No.
I think there is. I think this is actually a really good question, because I would say actually yes.
Okay.
Really?
So say more about it, Lily.
I would say actually yes.
Logan, watch it.
Like, if we were playing charades with you right now, Logan, I don't even know how to interpret your current bodily movements.
I would love to let them go first.
Okay, let's have
This is me being truly desperately honest.
Unvarnished. This is Lily unvarnished.
Yes,
right now. Yes.
Lily unhinged.
Unhinged.
Right now.
I am obsessed.
Okay.
Appropriate
word. 99.5% of me feels disgusting. I hate the world that we live in. I hate the way in which society has made it okay for not one, but two men to express their attraction to me in this way. There is a minuscule percent of me that thinks, okay, but I did my job. Like, I got, like, I intended to leave the house looking my absolute best. And so, whether male or female, if a single stranger doesn't acknowledge that I look good, then I didn't fully do my job.
You put in effort, and there was an acknowledgement of that effort.
There was an effort. Granted, maybe these two men, and this is where the 99.5% of me is grossed out.
Yes.
There is a very high likelihood that these men across the street from me are more just doing that, expressing themselves in that way, as a response to my feminine form, not the specifics of what I have done to myself to make myself look the way that I look. So again, 99.5% of me is grossed out. But ultimately, there is that little bit of me that I'm like, okay, but I was successful. I set out with the intention of making myself look good, and a stranger on the street
noticed.
Who does not know me and has no, there's no relational capital, noticed and said or did something about it.
I literally, Logan, have nowhere to go.
Logan, well, you look so alarmed when I said that.
But you definitely were moving around quite a bit at the beginning of this conversation.
I think it's a very, I want to make sure it's a very strong reinforcement that that's, again, a 99.5% negative thing.
Yeah, I don't want to reinforce for those two men
don't
across the street.
That.
I'm not responding.
No.
I'm not even like looking up at them.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Because
right.
I'm terrified of what will happen to me if I do.
But yes. Lily Unvarnished Unhinged is incredible insight.
Yeah. And I will say I will maybe alter my answer in the sense that maybe not if I'm walking on the street because then 100% of me is now afraid.
Yes.
However, if I am in a situation where I feel safe and somebody... says something weird, says something gross, whatever, but I know I am in control of the situation and nothing bad is going to happen, then that 0.5% comes in and I'm like, okay.
If I'm with a friend or multiple friends, if I'm up at a bar and I'm with one of my girlfriends and a strange man starts complimenting me or even just talking to me, I'm like, okay, yeah, I did my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's fair. I'll allow that.
There is maybe just a funny story. I'd love to give, I want to start here first. There's a funny inverse to this. You mentioned men don't get complimentary, flattery things very often.
No, for sure.
Because,
not. For sure
you know,
not.
If we're hanging out with mostly other men, no guy is going up to their guy friends saying how great that shirt looks on them.
I literally have never thought that related to your appearance.
Exactly.
I hate that that happens for because I know men who do that with other men.
And so what I'll tell you is, as a bartender, I usually work Friday, Saturday evenings in an event where people are drinking alcohol. They're usually on the younger side of things. They're usually there. There's a lot of flirting that goes on. And it is the world's nicest ego boost because I'm the bartender. And there are girls who will come up and talk to me and compliment me and say things to me. And it feels wonderful. And it does. And I'll say even to one point, there was a point where I experienced full-blown sexual harassment. And I could not help but feel flattered to a certain degree.
Was
because
it, like,
it never happened.
That's the 99... across the street thing.
It had there was a woman who stayed as we were closing down the bar. And we were all cleaning. Everyone was exiting, filing out. The lights are on. The music is done. The environment is over. And this woman is leaning against the bar, calling me her Superman. Saying,
oh,
I don't
know
if I will come see what you
Okay, so wait a second. No. What percentage of you was responding positively to that?
So
I'm predicting more than 0.5%.
For the first 2 minutes of this, it was all, wow, I feel wonderful. This went on for 15 minutes.
Oh, that's weird.
And it continued, and it got progressively more sexual and progressively more involved.
Yuck.
And so it was, at the end, it was not a positive experience, but at the same time, because these roles are so rarely flipped, security was standing by. Dying, they were laughing, and it was hilarious. It's the things she, I cannot say the things that she was saying,
but
it was a total reversal and an interesting. It was the first time I'd ever experienced something like that. But it's interesting that like if I didn't work in this industry, this environment, that kind of attention is never given my way. Which I think brings back to the point you were making, Anna, is complimenting each other, complimenting someone of the opposite sex in the direction of the church in that context. Is such an uncomfortable thing to navigate, and it leads to giving a compliment to a man. There is so much intrinsic, wow, maybe they like me more than this compliment because so many men are so starved for it. And that is such an unfortunate thing. It's unfortunate on both sides of it, but I you were getting so lit up at the opportunity to ask a question. I don't know if you had a specific question you wanted to ask.
No, I think I'm just so intrigued by the men, because I do think inherently, like, we are both men and women harmed by this purity and modesty culture. and in just such different ways. Mm-hmm. And so to hear your side of, as a married woman who has had these conversations with my husband, like to understand that that's like more generally, this is the experience. Mm-hmm. And we are harming each other in different ways.
I'll say there first, as a guy, there's always a level of if I am in a relationship and my girlfriend is in the room, I am not complimenting any woman I've ever looked at. No one is prettier than my girlfriend.
I've never seen a woman in my life.
I don't know what they look like. The only woman I know is this one next to me who tells me she loves me. Others don't exist.
Yes.
So that's barrier number one. But barrier number two is the idea of complimenting someone and trying to, you know, not be that. I don't want it to come off like a cat call from across the street. How do I do that? Is there a way to do that? I don't know that there is. I'll just say nothing. And yeah, then we'll just back away from the situation entirely.
Okay, but to your first point, what you were just saying about, like, if your female significant other is in the room, it, like, I hate that that is the stereotype of women, and young women in particular, that we can't handle the man who we are in a relationship finding something about another woman attractive or pleasing. Like, and again, I think that's another fracture and another result of this culture where men and women can only compliment each other within the confines of a committed relationship. Mm-hmm. Because then if my man, I hate calling my husband.
I'm like, I love that.
Yes. Both of us
if
were like,
Trevor Lawrence is your man.
Like, if Corey complimented and gave a just sincere, heartfelt compliment mm-hmm. to a female friend or acquaintance in my, like, I would be so happy because I would just feel like this is like, there's wholeness mm-hmm. here. There is a way in which we are relating with one another that is, I don't, transcending maybe is too big of a word, the sexual element of these relationships mm-hmm. that, like, I want my husband to find pleasing and attractive things in other women and get beyond that barrier of, like, telling them, whether it's in my presence or not in my presence, because I just think that it makes for healthier relationships and is doing that, like, restorative work that I think, especially as followers of Jesus, we should be striving towards in our relationships with one another across gender lines. And I think, like, the Billy Graham rule and all of these things, like, they have just destroyed mm-hmm. the possibility of restorative relationship. And I think if more women, I'll start with women's responsibility, if more women would be willing to allow their male significant others to compliment other women, but then it with that, if more men were willing to, like, do that, and I think, again, like this, like, it goes for both of us, being able to freely compliment one another on our physical appearances as a starting point, I think there could be so much restoration that happens in how we relate to one another. If I can acknowledge that, like, I find something about a male friend attractive and my husband is aware of this, and it's not like I'm not motivated by a desire to mm-hmm. have a relationship mm-hmm. with this other man. Mm-hmm. I'm just motivated by, I want to give him, like, this encouragement and acknowledgement of the work that he's put in.
Yeah, and I think that's where I want to go in just a little bit about, you said it so well, Lily, is what does it look like to have a healthy, restorative relationship across gender lines, mm-hmm. male and female, where, and you just mentioned it, where just because I might compliment you or notice something about you, that doesn't in any way mean that I want to be with you or that mm-hmm. I am sexually objectifying you. But yeah. I think the modesty and the purity movement was a reaction to sort of the constant objectification, the constant sort of I want to mm-hmm. lust after you. Mm-hmm. So it was more of a protective movement as opposed to a mm-hmm. kingdom movement. It was a sort of a reaction that said, you know, women have to dress a certain way because if they don't, men are going to be a certain way towards them. And so I want to talk about mm-hmm. that a little bit, but there's a few more things to mention here.
Yeah, I will say, going back to the conversation about my working environment as well, and especially working, again, in a primarily queer coffee shop, one of the conversations that has happened over the time that I've worked there that has been incredibly helpful for me in a lot of ways has been the breaking down of different kinds of attraction. Because one of the things that was always communicated to me directly or indirectly growing up in the church is that anything physical is automatically also sexual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is something that I'm still in the process of unworking mm-hmm. in so many ways. But one of the conversations that a lot of my friends and I have been having at work lately is the idea of the difference between aesthetic attraction and sexual attraction. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of I can find something aesthetically pleasing in the way that I would like looking at a beautiful painting or mm-hmm. that sort yes. of thing, that doesn't mean that I am sexually attracted to the painting. It means yeah. that that's pretty and I like looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sort of thing. And so a lot of the compliments that I feel like, I don't know. I feel like especially having grown up in the church, my interpretation, generally speaking, of compliments, especially from men,
yep.
is that they are sexually intended, not aesthetically mm-hmm. intended.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think if the church could learn to separate different kinds of attraction and an appreciation of beauty without it necessarily being tied to sexual attraction, then I think there could be some open space for more of those kinds of conversations, more of those genuine compliments and
yeah.
all of that between men and women.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, Anna, what you addressed is like that inherent damage that has been done because of purity and modesty culture is that every compliment or conversation about what's attractive about other people is inherently viewed through the lens of the sexual. Mm-hmm. And so, again, being able to unlearn that and walk backwards and say, like, no, there's a way in which like we need to be able to have honest conversations with our partners and also just with other people. And yeah, I don't know. I just think like that's the inherent damage I think that has been done is that all of this is viewed through the lens of the sexual. And so we can't, that's why the Billy Graham rule exists mm-hmm. because we can't sit in a room, one man and one woman, and there's an assumption that, well, something must have happened, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because we're looking at everything through that one lens.
And I can for sure say, and I mean, Logan, I'm not sure what your background was, but in my years of teaching a sexuality class, and it's been almost 17 years now, when I talk to the common experience of young men is when they're coming to an age of adolescence and they're maybe starting to wake up in terms of, I have certain feelings or I'm noticing certain things. That the only version of noticing is a sexual, it gets interpreted as a sexual noticing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then there gets to be all of these sort of, I don't know, covert or sort of like hidden pornography things that begin to happen. And of course, pornography is not hidden anymore. It's mm-hmm. it's all over the place. And so almost the first move of waking up in adolescence to maybe being attracted to somebody else immediately gets tied to pornography. It's like, that woman is hot and therefore I must want to have sex with her.
Yeah.
And then it turns into all of just sort of this that tie-in becomes so deep that we don't have any categories, often young men don't, to just be able to say, hey, I think she's pretty. Mm-hmm. Or and as you so wonderfully said, there's like an aesthetic pleasing thing here, but that doesn't mean I have some sort of sexual desire. It doesn't mean I want to be with them. Men skip over all of those categories and they immediately just go from I have a desire, I feel attraction, that must mean that I want to have sex with this person.
And then that's what gets ingrained in the brain
totally.
Is that it builds that neural pathway
100%
where, okay, yeah, I've had these thoughts and feelings, and so that means sexual chemistry.
Right.
And then it just, the more times that it happens and the more times that the relationship between those two things is affirmed, it like that becomes the only framework with which you can think about things like that.
And mm-hmm. then if a young man is having these experiences, these feelings that they, one, feel shame about, and two, cannot express, well, there's a whole world on the internet that they can mm-hmm. delve into where they mm-hmm. can work out those feelings and not hurt anyone in the process, not offend anyone in the process. Mm-hmm. And then the trap of pornography is with them through their entire adolescent life.
And that leads us to the mindset. And I've read Christian books about this. And there was one book specifically that was titled For Women Only, I think. And the author I once interviewed, and she was a great woman. I really appreciated her research. But she made a comment in her book. It was a book written for women to understand how men are wired. Hmm. And she made the comment, and it was a pretty common one, that said, you just need to understand, women, that men are sexual hunters. They've been designed by God to be sexual hunters, so they are going to view women in a certain kind of way. The man that you're looking for is the one who is going to bounce their eyes or avert their eyes and sort of bounce them back towards you. And so then what that creates is what you have been talking about earlier is then mm-hmm. the purity culture that women – so given the fact that men are sexual hunters, so the –
yep.
You know, mm-hmm. the claim goes, that means that women have to dress in a certain kind of way mm-hmm. so as to dissuade men in their sexual hunting from wanting to hunt after them.
Mm-hmm.
And there now we have the modesty culture, the purity yeah. culture sort of developing that it became the woman's responsibility to help block the men's sexual instincts and hunting instincts from happening. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was maybe 10, 12 years ago or so that I just called BS on all of that in mm-hmm. class. I said, I don't buy for a second that God has wired men to be sexual hunters, to want to objectify and sort of mm-hmm. hunt for women in this world and then causing women to have to react in that sort of way. I think that men don't grow up in an environment where they're trained any other way. They're yeah. trained by pornography at a very early age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that lands on all of you, but that certainly, yeah. as I've talked about mm-hmm. it in class, that has tended to be the young male experiences. I started waking up in adolescence to some attractions and desires, and it immediately got interpreted at a very formative, malleable yeah. age as meaning yeah. that I'm just the sexual person.
And that those feelings were bad and wrong.
Correct.
And you need to put them yeah. down until there's a ring on your finger.
That 100%
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the conversation about it then being the woman's responsibility, the modesty and all of that, I will say there's also a weird other side to that in the sense of, yes, you both have to be modest in terms of helping men control where their gaze is going, but also you have to be appealing enough to get yes. a man to notice you because yeah. that is where your value is. And so that is a wire thin line to walk mm-hmm. where you are modest enough that you are not an active sinner in the eyes of God, but you also have to be appealing enough to get a godly husband. And that's like such a weird two-edged, like I can't, that it makes yeah. me so angry.
It's the woman's responsibility for both things.
Right.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because and
if women are dressing modest enough, then, well, somehow the right men who are killing their
right.
sexual hunting desires
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
still aren't going to notice you if you're too modest.
Mm. Right. Or totally. You will suddenly not be like desirable to yeah. your significant other anymore if you're too modest about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other piece of that is that I had a strange experience the other day. I'm sitting here in leggings and a hoodie. And the other day at work, I wore leggings and then like a fitted cropped turtleneck. I felt really good, all of the things. And then about 2 hours into my day, I suddenly was like, I feel uncomfortable. I don't like how I feel in my skin right now. I don't feel like myself. I don't whatever. And it's one of those things where I'm not a fan of purity culture. I don't agree with the theology behind the idea of modest is hottest, and I feel most comfortable in my own skin when I'm not necessarily wearing revealing clothing, when I am being more modest, and that's more about my personal style than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, I think there's such a switch between the idea of purity culture or modesty culture and all of that, and then, well, wear whatever you want and blah 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 blah, blah all the things, and you can
mm-hmm.
I don't know. And so I think for me, it's an element of I want to be able to just wear what I want and present myself however I want to present myself in society without it being taken one way or another. And I understand that that's unfortunately kind of wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an element of I want to feel comfortable in my body, in my own skin, all of those things. And the way for me to do that isn't always necessarily by wearing really revealing clothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that I think my body is a sin
yeah.
to dress modestly. Mm-hmm. Does yeah. that make sense?
It does.
Totally.
It does.
Something I was thinking about when you were talking to Peter is like this, the way in which, what's the difference between, I mean, nature versus nurture? Like mm-hmm. how are we wired as men and women? And how are we socialized in the world that we live in? And I feel mm-hmm. like this is something that I talk about a lot when I talk about feminism in Christian circles is there is this way in which, yes, I do believe men and women are created different
mm-hmm.
in our just biology, but then mm-hmm. also in how that impacts how our brains work, right? Like there are inherent differences in men and women and between the two genders. But I don't think that means we always can put like, we can't have a, we don't have a list of like, these are male traits, these are female traits. Like, we're all socialized into these particular contexts where maybe there are trends in how women on many indexes show up more empathetic mm-hmm. than men do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, that, that's not necessarily something I would call a nature trait. I would go back to like thinking about how are you socialized? Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of girls are raised to be more nurturing than mm-hmm. their brothers are. You know, they're raised to think differently about the emotional experiences of others. And so I think that's just like this component that within the church, it's like we're almost unwilling to talk about.
For sure we are.
Like we have, it's like, well, either God ordained these differences in how men and the traits that men and women have, or you are whatever, you just like believe whatever, and men and women are interchangeable and it gender doesn't matter.
Yep.
And I think we have to like get closer to this. It does matter. Like, I think we reflect these different pieces of God's character, but it's not this black and white list A, list B mm-hmm. way, because we're all socialized within our particular cultures. And
yeah, I think mm-hmm. what you said, I think, is really important there, Lily. It seems like if we err too much on one side, which emphasizes the distinctions between male and female that seem to be hardwired. And again, it's hard to even verbalize maybe what those things are.
Yeah.
But if you just stay there, then you're not appreciating that there's a sociological shaping dimension to all mm-hmm. of this, too. But if you just, it's all about sociology, then you're ignoring what are some fairly common patterns and distinctives as well. So it's a great, we're in a place of real confusion for sure as a culture, mm-hmm. maybe a podcast for a different time about those sorts of things. But I'm curious, as we wrap up this podcast, what are your instincts about what might make healthy relationships? Like how could we bring back some health mm-hmm. to where we are and how we see one another? And I know for me, my journey out of the baloney that I'm a sexual hunter, I'm just going to see women in this way, the best thing I can do is bounce my eyes and blah, blah, blah. Like my thing was, I just began to ask God, I said, can you help me see the women in the world the way that you do? Because I bet you don't have to bounce your eyes. Like, I don't think yeah. God is texting the rest of the Trinity saying, you know what, I'm really struggling today, you know? And so Spirit, come along. I'm just, you know, I got to have my accountability Trinity here. And again, maybe, I mean, I'm sympathetic to that.
I love imagining the Trinity in a group chat. That
I know.
Is, yeah.
Spirit's here, you know, the Spirit's like, I'm here for you, you know, Father. Yeah. I'll help you through.
Jesus sends a meme. It's yeah. great.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, Band of Brothers in the Trinity or something. So,
wow.
But in fairness, it's too long of a story. But I remember when I finally woke up about 3 to 5 years into that story and be like, oh, my gosh, I think I'm genuinely seeing women in the world in a way that is not like bent towards them or meant to lean into. You just noticed people. But the weirdest thing happened is I saw men differently then, too. It in removing the sexual objectification of women that I wanted removed from the way that I sort of first saw and then would have to kind of backpedal and back off of it, it changed everything about how I saw everybody. Mm-hmm. And so that's too long of a story again. And like the pathway out of that for men who maybe have been in long standing times of maybe pornographic addiction or something, your brain does get wired. I mean, Christian mm-hmm. neuroscience demonstrates that your brain gets wired in a certain kind of way, and to detox from all of that and to rewire some things, it takes some time. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one place is just to help. I would say that one place of bringing some health into this is just to encourage people to say men are not designed to be sexual hunters, meaning that they're meant to walk around the world seeing women through the lens of sexuality all the time. That would be my – do you guys have other instincts or suggestions about this?
I would say, and I'm curious Logan and Anna's reaction to this in particular, I think genuinely – in a lot of ways, like the church obviously valorizes marriage and that's like your end goal, like you want to be married, whatever, family, mm-hmm. that whole thing. Problematic in so many ways. But mm-hmm. I do feel that there is this undue burden on married people in particular to lead the charge in like restoring some of these ways that we relate to one another.
Mm.
Because there's from the outset, if I compliment Logan, he knows I'm married, knows my husband, can mm-hmm. see the ring on my finger.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so there's going to be less assumption mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. what I say, if I'm in a healthy marriage, which mm-hmm. I am and people I think are aware of, like there's going to be less assumption that my compliment towards him is intended in a sexual mm-hmm. manner, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that to me is where like I think there are like people who are, I mean, married people especially, but people in committed relationships, I think there is more of a burden on those of us who are in committed partnerships with others of the opposite sex in particular to kind of like lead this charge in trying to, even if we just start as simple with like complimenting one another mm-hmm. to do that, because I think that there is, it's more inherently restorative mm-hmm. because there's less assumption. Mm-hmm. Like if mm-hmm. I'm going to compliment Logan on something he's wearing or how he's done his hair today or whatever it is, I hope to God he's not assuming that I'm flirting with him.
Yeah.
Because we're both very aware of the fact that I'm a married woman.
You talked so much about removing the a compliment from like the sexual versus just the appreciation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way of saying like, I know that that barrier is immediately gone.
Yeah.
Coming from a married individual or someone who's in a happy relationship, I know that that's not there and I can just appreciate the compliment. Mm-hmm. And I can just take it as a whole, fulfilling, wonderful, happy me feeling. Mm-hmm. I love that you say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would just like to take that maybe one step further. I think it starts like there has to be that relational capital where like
there does, yeah.
whether it's not, I'm not going up to a random guy I see at a bar and being like, I'm married, by the way, but I really like your shirt. Like, it's no, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's,
I love the idea of that. I do. This is my that. Ring.
Hello, yes. I am married.
Love the size of your biceps.
Yeah. Exactly. I am married. However. No, but I think like starting relate like within relationships like that are formed already, within mm-hmm. friendships,
yes.
within like those kind of things where like you already know and have this deep appreciation for one another. There is an inherent trust that's built there mm-hmm. in the same way that a marriage relationship creates this like boundary. It's like, okay, we already have that trust. Mm-hmm. So I can give you a compliment and I, as the compliment giver, don't have to worry that you're taking it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will say being a young woman and kind of forging into the idea of like being friends with men in recent years, this mm-hmm. is a new concept for me. This is not something that was yeah. like really available to me as an idea in high school, except for like guys that I had known my entire life. We grew up together. Those were the only exceptions to mm-hmm. that rule. I think for me, there's still an element, and this is unfortunately very cynical, and I am I have actively been doing work on this and am continuing to do work on this. But for me, the idea is, or the experience that has happened over and over, is me going, I'm going to just view you as a person and hope that you are viewing me the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And over again, I'm proven wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really tricky piece, because I just do think there's just that much unhealth, both in the church and outside of the church, mm-hmm. related to it. And I think, Lily, what you just said in terms of like somebody has to start leading the way to just show something different, because I just yeah. don't think we have that many templates
no.
with which to work and to view and say, gosh, that actually is a different thing, which I think actually invites you, Logan. I mean, I think of all the years that we've known each other, I can't think of any time that you've ever complimented me. Like, this is your opportunity. Logan, like, I'm sure, there's many things about my appearance.
You're
like,
talking about physical? I have given you compliments before.
That's true. You have given me compliments, but I'm just like, there's so many things from which to choose. How would you narrow it down?
Peter, your head is so shiny.
I knew you were going to go there.
It's so bright.
I did
it's
kind of polish
so
it up.
Fulfilling.
Yeah, thanks. You know what? I'm just going
like
to
receive halo.
That. Yeah, you see me as God sees me. I can tell already.
Straight from the top, blinding down.
Yeah, well, it's his Shekinah for sure. All right, so we should probably wrap it there. I think a really important conversation. For sure, you have opened a box on some things that I think would be worth revisiting again, mm-hmm. hopefully maybe sometime this season. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. we should wrap it here with our Deeper Magic moment. Lily, I think you're the one that's bringing our Deeper
yes.
Magic moment today, right? And again, as a reminder, the Deeper Magic is just this idea of God's restorative energy that does exist in the world as a result of him coming out of the grave. We celebrate that Easter Sunday happened and that there's a new power at work in the world. And it happens in all sorts of known and unknown ways that we can appreciate. So what's our Deeper Magic moment today, Lily?
Well, I feel like it is very important to establish that we're recording this episode after the spring equinox. So legally and calendar Ly.
Wise.
That's not a word.
Sure.
Calendaring.
That was
wise.
A great adverb. Sure. The fact that you added an ly to a calendar, we have a new adverb. Yes.
It is spring,
yeah,
for all intents and purposes, mm-hmm, theoretically. Since we have been recording today, approximately an inch and a half,
mm-hmm,
two inches of snow, yeah, have fallen.
Yay.
But prior to sitting down for this recording, we took a moment and we just were able to appreciate the beauty of the snow, even though it is that time of year where we are very sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We had no shortage of snow this winter, but it's still so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think as I get older, I can't imagine living anywhere where we don't ever have snow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Just seeing it on the trees, as much as it's going to be cold when I step outside.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
have to warm
up
my car.
My snow.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's mm-hmm something about powdery snow sitting on a tree, making this fresh, what was dirty and brown lawn. Peter, you got to work on that.
Yeah, come on, man.
Wait, you just complimented me.
Yeah, no, I'm taking it back.
Okay.
Just seeing that just fresh newness is, there's something special about it.
Yeah.
There really is. There
and
really
something
is
about like coming down here and recording and there is no snow on the ground and then we come upstairs an hour later and it's this mm-hmm winter
it's
wonderland.
We're
there
in
was
a
something really
right
cool
now
about
yeah
it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So beautiful.
That's mm-hmm good. Well, on behalf of Logan and Lily and Anna, thanks for the great episode about male and female relationships. This has been The Deeper Magic, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us on The Deeper Magic. Until our next episode drops, join us on Instagram @DeeperMagicPodcast.